Today's gospel reading comes from the book of Luke, chapter 13. Now, he was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath, and just then there appeared a woman with a spirit that had crippled her for 18 years. She was bent over and was quite unable to stand up straight. When Jesus saw her, he called her over and said, "Woman, you are set free from your ailment." When he laid his hands on her, immediately she stood up straight and began praising God. But the leader of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had cured on the Sabbath, kept saying to the crowd, "There are 6 days on which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be cured, and not on the Sabbath day." But the Lord answered him and said, "You hypocrites! Does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it away to give it water? And ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 long years, be set free from this bondage on the Sabbath day?" When he said this, all his opponents were put to shame, and the entire crowd was rejoicing at all the wonderful things that he was doing. The word of the Lord.
Well, it's good to be with you after a few weeks. I'm Paul Schick. I almost feel like I need to introduce myself again. I do still work here. I've been away for these 2 weeks. Some of you know the first week was Mexico with some of our high school age young people. We did a mission trip and had a wonderful time. And I have to tell you, it was a great trip. A lot of it was because of how wonderful our kids are at this church and also our hosts there. And I'll be telling you a little about it, and then you'll hear more about it at another time when some of these kids come and tell you about it. And then I was also for the second week at the churchwide assembly in New Orleans, where the whole church meets, and we hear different reports and we make different decisions. So another wonderful time, very different. Instead of building buildings, I was sitting in meetings, but they were both good weeks in their own way, and I'll be eager to share about both of those as the months go on. But as we begin this sermon, I wanted to start with, if we could have an image that's on there, I hope. Yeah. You know, a lot of you have probably seen one of these before. This is one of those sort of hidden images where supposedly if you look at it the right way, there's something to be seen. I never knew what these were called, but apparently they're called stereograms. So I wonder if you guys look at this, if you have the ability, do you see anything beyond just some fuzzy lines? Anyone see a rabbit? No, maybe it doesn't work. Well, I couldn't tell you what it is because I wanted to show you this because when I look at anything like these things, I just see frustration because never in my whole life have I been able to see anything with these sorts of images. And people tell me, oh, you have to unfocus your eyes or focus your eyes or look through it. I don't know if my technique is off. I don't know if my eyes are bad or if everyone's just playing a trick on me who sees stuff, but I've never been able to see anything. I just see fuzzy patterns. Apparently there's a rabbit in here, but maybe it's not true. I just found it on the internet. Well, one of the interesting things about humanity is that we can look at the same thing and see different things. Some people can look at that and maybe see a rabbit, and then other people like me don't see anything but some fuzzy lines, and we can go on to the black slide now. And this is just kind of a truth in life, that human beings look at the same thing and they see different things. You know, some of us look at a cow and we see a precious animal, maybe some animal we almost want as a pet. Some of us look at a cow and we see a steak. Some of us look at a cow and we think about ranching, if you grew up with that kind of thing. In India, there are people of the Hindu faith who look at a cow and they see a sacred animal, right? So we look at the same thing and we see things differently. Take our flag, for instance, the American flag. In this country, we look at it and we see a symbol of our country. In other countries, they look at it and they don't think of it as their flag. They think of it as someone else's flag. Some people don't think of it much at all, just a piece of cloth. For me, it's certainly a symbol of my country, which I love. It's also, I understand, a symbol of men and women who served and lost their lives to protect our home. But even when I think about this component of it, how it kind of represents veterans and service to the country, I know that I do that with limited perspective because I am not myself a veteran. I don't know what the experiences are really like to be a veteran or the memories of veterans. And so I can't totally see that meaning when I look at a flag. My grandfather, who served in World War II in Italy and North Africa, I imagine when he looked at the flag and he thought about the service members who served our country, he did so with actual memories of war and sacrifice and friends who were lost. So he knew what it was like, and he saw that, I'm sure, when he looked at an American flag. So my point is just that we can look at the same thing and see things completely differently. Sometimes it's because of what we've been through. Because of what we've been through, we can see things others can't. Other times, because of our limitations, other people can see things, and we're blind to them. And, you know, this isn't all bad that we see things differently. You know, it's neat that we look at the same thing and all bring different perspectives. It's also unavoidable that we see things differently because our experiences are different, our upbringings are different, our personalities are different. So part of the richness of life is that we see things differently. This being said, you know, as Christians and as followers of Jesus, as we look around at our world, as we look for God, as we look for meaning, there are certain kinds of things that Jesus seems to want us to be able to see. There are certain realities about God, about the world, about humanity, about ethics that Jesus does not want us to be blind to. And so today I'd like to explore these themes of sight and blindness as we think about our gospel lesson. In the gospel, we meet Jesus teaching in a synagogue, and you probably know that a synagogue is just kind of the Jewish equivalent to a church. And so Jesus is there and he's teaching. And it says, while he's teaching, this woman appeared in the crowd. And it says that she's been crippled for 18 years. For 18 years, she's been weighed down by this affliction, which makes her unable to even stand straight. So 18 years, and someone was saying as we were talking about this reading, think about how long 18 years is, whether a good thing or a bad thing. 18 years is a long time. And that's a really long time to suffer. I mean, think about how many things were different in your life 18 years ago. For some of you who are younger, you were nowhere 18 years ago. You weren't even born. Even for those of you who are older or adults, you know, 18 years ago, lots of things were different. When I think about 18 years ago, I was still in high school. I hadn't graduated yet. When I think about 18 years, I hadn't been married yet. I hadn't finished college. It was before we'd lived abroad. It was before I decided to be a pastor. It was before I was called here. It was before I had children. And so a lot has happened in 18 years. It's a long time, and 18 years is a long time to suffer. So this poor woman has been suffering for 18 years among this community. And key to how this story turns out is this detail in the story. It's that when this woman comes up with her affliction, it says that Jesus sees her, right? Jesus sees her. And this is no small thing, because remember in Jesus' time, there were lots of suffering people. There's always been lots of suffering people, but there were probably even more suffering people back then, because this was before the age of medical care. Lots of people were sick. Lots of people had problems. They lived under an oppressive system in the Roman Empire, and lots of people were struggling. Lots of people were poor. Lots of people were oppressed. And by this time, Jesus was a popular teacher, a popular healer, and so lots of people flocked to him looking for answers and looking for help. And yet with all the people in the world who are suffering and so many in need and all the people that flocked to Jesus, Jesus specifically saw this woman. And when he saw her, he recognized the pain that she lived with, and he recognized that she needed help. And he recognized that this woman, who the gospel doesn't even bother to name, was important to God. And so this woman became important to Jesus too. And he called her over and he laid his hands on her and he said, "Woman, you are set free from your ailment." And so that's the God we meet in today's story. A God who doesn't see all the suffering people in the world and just think of another statistic. A God who is not blind to anonymous people. No, we have a God who sees each of us. None of us are anonymous to this God, and he calls us closer so that we might find healing. Excuse me. And so that's what Jesus saw in this woman, and that's what Jesus was able to see. But as we think about another character in this story, he saw things much differently. And this is the leader of the synagogue, right? For this leader of the synagogue who we meet in this story, he didn't see a long-suffering child of God who was important and who had finally been healed. This synagogue leader didn't have any rejoicing about the healing, because it turns out, we learn in this story, that Jesus had healed on the Sabbath. And maybe if you remember your Bible studies from when you were a kid, when you were learning about the Old Testament, is that according to the Old Testament law, you weren't supposed to do any work on the Sabbath. It's connected to that story of 7 days of creation. On the seventh day, you rest. And the Jewish people were told to rest on the seventh day, and they really weren't supposed to do hardly anything. They were supposed to worship and be with their family, but they weren't supposed to do work. You couldn't bake, you couldn't sow, you couldn't work your farm. There were just a whole list of dozens and dozens of things that you weren't supposed to do. And according to this Jewish leader, neither were you supposed to heal. And so when this woman comes up and Jesus heals her, this Jewish leader rebukes the crowd for bringing this woman to Jesus on the Sabbath. How dare you? That is breaking the rules. Well, when Jesus hears of this religious leader's criticism of what he's done, he argues back. He says, you know, even you guys who are really intense about the Sabbath, he says, even you untie your animals on the Sabbath so that they can get water, and you lead them to water, and then you lead them back, and you retie them up. And he says, if even animals can be unbound on the Sabbath to find water, should not this woman, who's a child of God, who's a daughter of Abraham, should not she be unbound on the Sabbath as well? And so there's this argument about whether the rules are more important and this woman is left to suffer, or whether mercy and love and grace are more important, even if it fudges the rules. Well, as I think about this story, the saddest thing about the religious leader's reaction for me is that this leader has become totally blind to the value of this woman. In fact, though he had witnessed this woman, we imagine, for 18 years of her illness, you wonder if he even saw her at all. In a world where so many people were suffering, you wonder if maybe he had given up on really caring about hurting people and had chosen blindness to these issues as well. Maybe he had chosen to follow the letter of the law, to follow all the right rules, but his heart had kind of become blind to the hurting of people. And this is often what we do when we're overwhelmed by the sheer amount of suffering in the world, right? We say, you know, we look at all the people who are hurting, and we say to ourselves, I can't possibly help everybody. I mean, look at all the suffering. Look at all the problems there are out there. And so we tell ourselves, because I can't help everybody, I'm not going to worry too much about helping anybody. I'm going to choose to be blind to the needs of others because that's easier. Then I don't have to look at what's going on in the world with other people. Well, this mindset of hopelessness and blindness to people who are in need is common in our world. You know, it's one I'm tempted to when I see all the suffering. Sometimes I just don't even want to know. I just want to check out because it's too hard to know what to do. But quite frankly, this is also a mindset that Jesus calls us to resist with every ounce of our being. As I said earlier, all of us see some things and are blind to others, but one of the things that Jesus seems to really not want us to be blind to is the value of other people, right? Jesus wants us to see other people and to see their value. Instead of giving into a blindness of the heart, again and again in the gospel, Jesus is teaching us to open our hearts to seeing the world and seeing other people and seeing God as he sees these things. Well, I recently, like I said, returned to from Mexico with 12 of our youths on this fantastic trip. We had gone to an area kind of outside of Tijuana, a very poor area, and it was a fantastic trip. And like I said, the kids we went with were wonderful. The people who hosted us were wonderful, and the work we did was so meaningful. And so there's lots of wonderful things about this trip. But I often ask myself, whenever we're doing a summer trip, and certainly in this case as well, why are we doing this, right? Why do we even do these trips? Because if you think about them, a lot of work and a lot of money goes into them. They're expensive. We're going to a place, or we went to a place, where the water isn't clean. You can't drink it. I kept on telling the people we were with, what is the most dangerous thing in Mexico that's most likely to get you in trouble? And the answer was the water, right? Don't drink the water. The beds we slept on weren't comfortable, and there's always some risk with going to another country. And even though we helped some people and it was really wonderful, we know that there's certainly a lot more need than we can meet. So I asked myself, when we do these trips, why do we even do them? And so as I was going through this week with our kids, I was thinking about this question. I kept it in the back of my mind. And I started watching what was going on. I was watching as our kids entered into this new country, and we looked around outside of Tijuana, and we saw people living in shacks made of leftover materials, leftover boards, leftover pieces of metal, leftover cardboard. This is the state a lot of people were living in. And I saw and felt the apprehension of being in a new place where we looked different, where we talked different, where we couldn't communicate very effectively, where we were pretty defenseless, you know. When you're in a new country, you're vulnerable to the people there. And after a while, when we got there, we began building these houses with limited skill and, quite frankly, limited instructions. They kind of gave us a very rough blueprint, but it wasn't very clear. And we made some progress in the house, and it would start taking shape. And then sometimes the people from the organization would come by, and some things were good, but then they'd look at part of it and say, oh, you did that wall wrong. You have to tear it apart. So we would tear it apart, and it was really frustrating, but we would keep on going. And at night, we would return to this center where we were staying, and it was also a place where orphaned children were living. And so I would watch as our kids started making relationships with these kids and playing with them. I'd watch some of our girls having their hair done by these little girls, and they were laughing and comparing different things. And I was watching as some of our other kids were kicking around a soccer ball with some of the kids who lived here. And I saw a relationship forming between us and them, along with this realization that even though we come from different backgrounds and our language is different and our level of wealth is different, we're all human beings with the same basic hopes and needs. And so the week kept on going on, and over time our house took shape and it started standing up, and our kids and me were getting better at driving nails into boards. At first there were lots and lots of bent nails. And as the week went on, we began to meet the families who would be moving into their homes. One mom that we built for in our group had been living in a tiny shack with three other families who all had kids. And we were going to be building her a house so that her and her two kids could have their own home. We were with another youth group from California, and the site they went to after the first morning that they had built, when they came back in the morning, there was a pile of just two boards kind of piled up next to each other. And apparently a mom and a baby had slept in those the night before, and the other family had slept in the car. And so knowing these things, it was so meaningful at the end of the week when we could hand over the keys and see the joy on these families' faces as they moved into a new home, and the joy on our faces as we thought about what we could be part of. And so what I realized after a week of doing these trips is that we do these trips because they help us see. And, you know, it's nice to help people. It was nice to build a home. It was nice to give people a nicer living situation. But like I said, there's lots of people who would need help. The bigger thing is that when we do experiences like these, they help us see new things about the world, and not just with our eyes, but they help our hearts see in new ways. They teach us that even though some people are much more impoverished than us, they are no less valuable than us. These kinds of experiences teach us that when we follow Jesus in the way of helping others, when we build houses, for instance, with other people, it doesn't take anything away from us. It actually adds joy. These kids were so happy participating in this. And we pray that these kinds of experiences for our kids would help them see that it's fun to go and help neighbors in Mexico, but really this is meant to be a way of life, that we're helping people where we are in our own communities as well. So those were some of my thoughts about why we do this trip. And I think really all of us in our world need experiences that remind us to see God and neighbor in new ways. And so as we think about this story and we think about Jesus and how he saw this woman in the pain she was in and brought her healing, we can pray that God would also give us eyes to see. He would give us eyes to see when there's someone in our world who we have the opportunity to share mercy with. And he would help us to learn to see that even though none of us can do it all of us have a role in offering mercy to other people whenever we can. And so may all of our eyes be opened to Jesus and to his role for us in our lives together. Amen.